It's time once again for the William Hill Sports Show, live from the William Hill Sportsbook inside the Club Cal Neva. Here's your host, Kenny B.
All right. William Hill fans, sports fans, coming to you a little bit early today because of the Boston-Miami game. Tips off about 5:30, so we thought we'd come on at 3:30. I think the pregame starts at 5, so me and Josh are here in the studio at ESPN just getting ready to go over. I mean, so much stuff to talk about right now. Josh, what's going on? Josh, sports writer for Sportsline.
Yeah, Ken, plenty. Like I said, this most jam-packed sports weekend probably of the year so far. But you mentioned the first thing, elimination game in the NBA playoffs tonight, which overall the NBA playoffs have been pretty entertaining. But Heat could possibly close out the Celtics in Game 5. But as you mentioned, a wealth of everything else. The NFL full swing Week 3 and lots more college football on board as well.
Absolutely. First weekend of the SEC, which is fantastic. And staying with college football, I guess the big news, Josh, is that it looks like the Mountain West Conference has decided to follow the Pac-12's lead, and it looks like we're going to have a football season this year, 8-game season. I don't think the specifics have been released yet, other than the fact that it is an 8-game season. I'm assuming, you know, it's all conference. I'm assuming that it's 4 home games and 4 away games. And I'm assuming the playoffs will be available at the end of the year like they were scheduled before, the two different divisions. And the one thing I'm not uncertain of is, you know, attendance and fan participation. Is it going to be totally empty? Are we going to allow X percentage of people into the stadium to watch the games, you know, as long as they recognize the social distancing mandate? And for me, I have a skybox. I mean, and I haven't even talked to our people up at the university yet to find out if, you know, what the stipulations are for our skybox. You know, is it half capacity? I know currently you can set up bars, you know, with people and hang out with people that you travel with. So if I'm traveling with my group of people, are masks required in the skybox? I don't know. I mean, there's so many uncertainties right now. But the good news is it appears that Wolfpack football is back with the 8-game schedule, 4 home, I'm assuming 4 away games. You know, and I've been reading a lot. You know, you have a lot of chance to read and catch up on, stay up on things. And I'm really excited about, and I said this earlier, even before the season got canceled, I was very disappointed because I think this is one of the better Wolfpack football teams we've had in a long time, Josh.
Yeah, now we'll get a chance to see him, Kenny. I think all the questions you asked, I think, should be answered soon, because one thing we were talking about way before the decisions were made, you know, to cancel, restart, or whatnot, I mentioned, you know, these administrators, you know, Doug Knuth, everyone else at the university, this is something they spent all that time off, you know, pondering, like, okay, if it comes back, how can we pull this off? So I think, by and large, they already have these protocols or whatever you want to call them in place for how they're going to handle it in terms of attendance and what the you know, rules and regulations are going to be. Ken, I just feel like, by and large, I think I mentioned this, you know, last week, you know, it's unfortunate to see, you know, these conferences, you know, come along late and join the ones that were already doing it. And it makes you wonder where the, you know, basically the separation of opinion or whatever happened at the outset. I do believe all of them thought, you know, it was going to be a one-size-fits-all deal where once decided they were playing, everyone would, or vice versa, once they quit. I think there was a miscommunication there, but I still think it was more or less a big failure on the NCAA's part, which, you know, they're the overhead governing organization of college sports, right? It seems like all they really do is they're a clearinghouse for eligibility issues for the athletes, and they organize the championship events. When this happened, you would think, you know, they had months to figure this out, where I don't understand why they didn't get, like, every conference commissioner in the country, you know, have whatever, 2 weeks worth of meetings to figure this out, exactly what the, you know, protocols would be, all right, how they're going to deal with you know, the offset of eligibility with players who might opt out but still have eligibility versus those coming in and the scholarship distribution, things like that. But I think that's all stuff they could have done, and, like, NCAA sets the standards and everyone agrees that they're in. Instead, it seemed like it was sort of every man for themselves, which led to this real jumbled and parsed out, you know, fragmented college football season. But now that everyone's back in some form, it looks like there's going to be, you know, at least some semblance of a level playing field, and that they have talked now, even though it's on the late side, but the NCAA is putting forth, you know, the rules to qualify for the college football playoff. Okay, we're going to grade it. You know, years past, they had their criteria, get non-conference games and your power rating for your conference. Now they're readjusting the criteria for that. So it seems like everyone's who's playing, you know, will have an equal shot at, you know, the 4-team playoff. And you know, these conferences that are coming back late at least have the advantage of seeing how they're doing it so far and following your protocols are working for everyone else.
You know, what I was looking up right now, as far as attendance and stuff and capacities are concerned, it says that the capacities will be determined by each member's institution in accordance with the state, county, local health ordinances and consultation of the government officials. So basically whatever your state, your county admits. And a little teaser, because I can't speak on it right now because I'm vowed to secrecy, but there might be a big announcement next week as far as what the social gathering requirements might be. So with that being said, you know, maybe, hopefully it's good news. Hopefully, you know, we can allow X amount of people as long as, we recognize social distancing, and we will get some fans up at Mackey. You know, I'm excited. Yeah. I want to see this team play. I really think that, you know, it's a team that, you know, if they play well and catch some breaks, they're talented enough to represent, you know, their division in the Mountain West Conference title game, Josh. I'm very excited about this. Very.
Yeah, like you said, Ken, because I remember – yeah, it was probably the last week, 2 weeks ago. I mean, spending portions of the show just lamenting that there'd be no Wolfpack football. I think at some point we'd all just sort of come to grips with that. And what do you know? It's only, you know, pleasant surprise. You wake up one day and they're coming back. And like I said, to me, it's much preferred one way or the other. I'd like to at least give everyone a chance to compete. It would have been sad to see, you know, so many college athletes with eligibility remaining who just wouldn't get that last chance to play, right? I mean, you would have things. How many, let's say, like, say, borderline players, say Division I guys who were solid scholarship players but not NFL potential or whatever, say they're seniors, so they remain on scholarship. So many of them probably were just going to graduate and then be done with it and never get that last go-round. Now they're going to get that chance.
Late bloomers.
Right, exactly.
These are young men. Some of them, you know, they mature later. Some of them mature earlier, you know. Mm-hmm. And some of these guys, you know, might have had their big growth spurt between their junior and senior year or sophomore between junior year. So, you know, there's no tape on them. They, you know, and these NFL teams don't realize, oh, my goodness, this guy, he grew 6 inches and put on 40 pounds of solid muscle. You know, now he's got an NFL-type body, you know, because things like this happen. I mean, these guys been in the gym, you know, busting their butts, and, you know, they deserve to be seen. You know, I think that, you know, the NFL has shown, the NBA has shown, the NHL has shown that you can accomplish this. And if you go by strict guidelines and standards and rules, you can accomplish this, Josh.
Yeah. Like, I agree. And Ken, for what it's worth, like I said, to me it's just disappointing. With so much time to, you know, prepare or whatever as you know, sports were on hiatus or whatever. I'm disappointed that college athletics didn't have more leadership just from the overall, you know, governmental head of the thing, which I do believe was the core cause of college football being so fractured. But I am glad to see them get a chance. And Kenya, I mentioned way before NFL started, remember we had to talk about fans. I was curious. I figured the NFL would do something that would try to ensure, you know, competitive fairness across the board in terms of fans or whatnot. I mean, I wasn't sure they would let them have fans one area and not the another, or maybe they'd put a cap on it. But it turns out, because the franchises are going to see so much revenue lost because of the gate, that the NFL has gone with whatever's allowed locally. So they say, hey, if regionally, whatever your deal is, you know, with for gatherings, just honor that. And, you know, just basically letting the clubs recoup whatever they can from what is still going to be a big revenue loss. So that's why you see, you know, this is going to be evolving throughout the season, and it'll probably be a thing where certain stadiums that didn't have fans for like 2 or 3 games suddenly will. So everyone's going to get a shot there too.
Handled week by week is exactly right, Josh. You know, Mark Davis came out and said there's not going to be any fans at the new Raiders stadium this year. I'll bet you right now, whatever you want to bet, there's fans before the end of the year.
I agree with you. You have to make adjustments. He's not going to take a zero for that.
Absolutely. You have to make adjustments on the fly. You absolutely have to. When it comes to NCAA football, those football programs, they fund all the other sports. Those other sports cannot survive based upon their revenue. Maybe some of the big-time basketball schools. Maybe the Dukes. You know, the schools like that. But college football funds everything else. And this is good news for Wolfpack basketball. You know, think about, you know, I was worried about the Wolfpack basketball season. They said, oh, we're going to play. But you never know. They could have pulled the rug out, Josh. Now, if we can do this and play this 8-game season and get it right, things look good for Wolfpack basketball. And I've been saying all along, I think this Wolfpack basketball team is going to be a lot better than people think.
Yeah, for sure, Ken. And you mentioned, I think that's huge, you know, across the board. Of course, the finances were a huge part of all this. But I even take a look at, you know, university like Stanford, who nobody you ever expects to be in the poorhouse or anything like that. But as soon as football was announced as canceled, that's when they like immediately cut. I think it was like 11 or 12 varsity sports. It's like, even that, first of all, Stanford on a football level hasn't been prominent nationally only for about the past decade, to the Harbaugh era. They were awful before that. So they've only even been a player in terms of a real team to watch for about 10 years. And if you look, even when they're really good, Stanford Stadium, you know, very, very rare, unless they got Notre Dame in town, but it's very rarely packed. You know, Stanford's obviously about academics first and foremost. And so they don't even have the type of revenue like obviously Alabama or Tennessee or whoever would have. But even with that, with as big as football was, they said, yeah, without it this year, we're not going to be able to have, you know, the field hockey and the rowing or whatever, because most of what they cut tend to be niche sports. But those are still athletes who came from all over the country on scholarship to do their thing and without a, you know, sport to play anymore. So I'm thinking that sort of thing, like I said, even if it's not 100% of what they would have made, anything helps.
Absolutely. You know, and I want to throw this out there, too, just for everybody to think about. This is about the kids, not about us, the fans. So no matter what your beliefs are when it comes to the COVID, the pandemic, the guidelines that have been handed down, follow the guidelines for the good of the kids. Even if you don't believe that you should have to wear a mask, this is for the kids. Don't get – you're talking about these kids' futures. Be bigger in this situation. Whether or not – I'm not saying that I agree or disagree with the masks 24/7. Actually, I'll say it. I disagree with it. But I can tell you this, that if I'm going to a sporting event where I'm watching these college kids, I'm going to do everything I can to keep these kids on the field. And if it means that I have to wear a mask and be uncomfortable, I'm going to do it. I really am. But my opinion about the mask is I'm not on board with it. I think it's overblown, and we've openly talked about this, Josh, and had little semi-arguments about it or differences of opinion. But I can assure you right now, if they say that I have to wear a mask in my skybox to watch these kids and it's going to keep the kids on the field, then I'm going to do it. So do your part. I mean, at least in this, because this isn't about you so much. This is about these kids, and if they're going to give a shot, be given a shot, we have to do our part too.
No, I agree. And like you mentioned with the Mark Davis thing, I will say – I have a little respect for him because did you hear the other night where they said he wouldn't even attend the game where he said, I'm not going until fans are allowed. So he stayed home too. I thought it'd be unfair to him.
We'll see.
Which is unusual. It's, right. So exactly. So he's looking like a martyr now. But I totally agree where it's like he says, oh, full stadium or nothing. He's not going to stand by that at all. And as soon as they start allowing whatever it is, 25%, he'll be there.
Well, there's some of these pro stadiums that, and college stadiums where they allowed X percentage in week one, and it's actually they're increasing it now. So, I mean, they're saying, well, we can do this. And why couldn't you? Think about how many sections sell a section. Space. And if you have a section that has 25 people and you have six people that want to go and buy that section, let them go. And then just keep everybody socially distanced. I mean, you're just leaving money on the table. You can manage this. You can absolutely manage this. There'll be people that would be willing. It's like Hot Dogs Nights and all the volunteers they have. There'll be people that would be willing to volunteer to go and be able to watch the game and control the crowd flow too. So I think it can be managed. I absolutely do. Figure it out. Let's go. We got a month.
Yeah, exactly. And here's another thing. You know, with the SEC and what looks like the other teams are going to do, this delayed start thing, that became a whole idea when they announced how the differences in the conferences and SEC says we're going to play. They immediately started adapting that plan to which they're going to start tomorrow, but it was a few weeks behind what would have been the traditional start. I guess I don't understand why this just wasn't seen as a solution sooner, buy even more time to figure stuff out. But let's face it, as you said, Ken, in this day and age, how much can change in 3 or 4 weeks? A lot.
Sure.
So I'm just surprised from the start they just didn't say that. They said, you know what, let's cut all the non-conference games. Just get down to what we're doing now then.
Yeah.
But they said, okay, give us a little more time to figure this out. But, yeah, we don't necessarily have to cancel a four-month sport on the spur of the moment. It doesn't have to be. I think again, the times are changing. It's unpredictable, and you don't want to judge too harshly decisions that were made when people just don't have all the information. But I think maybe it was done in part because the NCAA tournament where they said, okay, it's all or nothing on that. But that's a three-week thing that you can't do over. So, right, it ended up being the call was made to cancel that, and there never really was a reasonable time to do it over again. So I think with football, I just do think they got a little hasty where it's like, no, you can bide your time here. And if you did a conference only, yeah, you can start up to, let's say, traditionally up to 6 weeks later than you might normally and still fit in enough games for it to count.
I'm interested, too, to see what's going to happen in Florida because if I'm not mistaken, Florida just dropped all mandates today. They opened the state back up. So does that mean when you go to a Gator football game or a Seminole football game or a Hurricane football game, or the stadium's going to be packed?
I would doubt that.
We've got about 15 seconds. We have to go to commercial.
Because the universities have their own things in place. Lots of universities are sending students home because of high numbers of cases or whatnot. So I think some of the ones who don't have students on campus might say, no, we're still doing the 20% or whatever.
Be interesting, though. Be very interesting. So there's a huge boxing match. When I come back, I'm going to ask you about it, Josh. I'm sure you've heard of it, and the listeners may or may not have heard about it. But you thought the Mayweather Conor McGregor fight was big. Wait till you hear this one. This is going to be good. We'll be back after these messages on ESPN 94.5 FM.
Now back to the William Hill Sports Show, live from the William Hill Sportsbook inside the Club Cal Neva.
Welcome back to William Hill Sports Show. I'm your host, Kenny B, here with Josh Nagel from Sportsline, Tommy Thompson, and John the Hawk Stevens couldn't make it, and Mark Vespi couldn't make it because of the early post today because of the Boston-Miami game, which we were talking about right before the break. But real quick, we're talking about boxing. I remember when when McGregor decided he was going to fight Floyd Mayweather. And I had a huge bet on that. I mean, I posted on our Facebook page, which you can go back and look at our stuff at Kenny B, ESPN Sports Handicapping. We had a 5-digit bet on it. Small fight, I guess 10,000. I mean, it's just barely, you know, to win a little bit. But now it's come out that Conor McGregor is, and who his next fight's going to be. And you know about this, right, Josh? Mm-hmm. Spence, do you know about this?
I do.
So Manny Pacquiao, I'll pay for it. And I think this is two different kind of fighters. You know, I think through Mayweather's whole career, he's been kind of a patty cake guy, defense, stick, move, out point. I think Pacquiao knocks him the stone cold out. Unless for some reason there's an incentive to get the rounds over. This is a totally different fight. And I don't think McGregor hits hard enough to phase Pacquiao. He's been hit by the best in the business. People that fight at his weight that are superstars. And it is not Conor McGregor. And Conor has no win in this fight. Pacquiao will absolutely not. He will destroy him and take him out as soon as he wants to, or carry him for as late as he wants to.
Yeah, well, we'll see, because obviously, you know, Pacquiao is a little long in the tooth himself, but obviously in the boxing realm, this is a mismatch. I saw that announcement today, too. And we'll see, like, if they sign it, whatever, so be it. I'm not so sure, though, with McGregor, he keeps coming in and out of the UFC. And the bottom line is that's what he's known for, right? I mean, he's built the UFC up from a publicity perspective, and I mean, that is where his realm of skill is at the absolute world-class level. I feel like, I don't know, maybe I'm just speaking for myself here, but I feel like the novelty of him in boxing just sort of wore off. Like, maybe he was more competitive against Floyd than was expected. Some of that, I think, had to do with Floyd, you know, sort of taking it easy for the first few rounds. But like you mentioned, even though Floyd's not known for his knockout power, he still stopped McGregor. Of course, it was, you know, the 10th round. It was more of a case of attrition than one specific blow. But so you're right. I mean, Pacquiao would probably, you know, end him a little quicker. At the same time, though, I don't know. Would I pay for that? I don't think so. If there was a different card on that night, I'm just, you know, McGregor, put it this way, if he became actually a professional boxer, he's shown some skills. You know, he could get in there. But these sort of novelty crossover fights, I'm kind of done with them.
Well, I watch it. I 100%. I'll have a party. I'll pay for the fight for everybody.
Yeah. I'm saying I'd rather see McGregor, you know, fight Dustin Poirier or someone in the UFC than this boxing stuff, but whatever.
Yeah, I hear you. I think it's exciting. I like the crossover. I like the excitement. I do. Sisolak emergency directive. Okay. Sisolak, I just saw an alert about Sisolak and his signing an emergency directive, including adjustments for gatherings and lifting certain restrictions on youth sports. I guess I can say it now. I can't tell you the specifics of it, but there is something coming next week, and it's good for reopening the economy. Conor McGregor, Pacquiao is going to be a monster favorite in this. I don't know. I'm not a big Conor McGregor fan. I like him in a lot of ways. I do respect Manny Pacquiao and what he's done over his career, but I want to see it, and I think he gets knocked out. I think he gets Mike Tyson'd.
Probably.
I really do. I think. I mean,
speaking of whom, some remains to be seen if the Tyson Roy Jones fight happens.
Yeah,
that's been postponed, and then Roy saying, "Oh, he wants more money," and that looks like. Speaking of which, kind of on a broader note, there, boxing is in serious trouble. It needs some help, and you know, we've talked so much over the years. I'm a big boxing fan. We've been to the local fights together where there's a card in town. I'd love to see it, you know, get pulled up, but it's in some serious trouble now. One, because there's lack of direction with the promoters and everything. I know Dana White, who is I say the opposite of a fan of Oscar De La Hoya. They've become rivals, like, because De La Hoya sort of, you know, tried to get into MMA, and Dana White wasn't big on that. But you know, the DAZN, which is, you know, the big conglomerate that De La Hoya is part of, I mean, that whole thing's just a mess. Did you hear about their contract thing with Canelo? They signed him to that 10-fight deal a while back that was supposed to guarantee him at least $30 million per fight, or maybe even it was 35. And now, since boxing's down so much, they're basically broke, and they asked him to take half. They're like, oh, sorry, we can't really pay you that much anymore. How about, you know, $18 million a fight? So he quit the contract and is suing them. And so at some point, Ken, boxing just needs to an infusion of new leadership and some sense of direction, because there's some good fights out there waiting to be had. But right now, boxing is straight up hurting.
Yeah, let's let the new infusion come from the young Mills Lane's kids, Terry and Tommy Lane from Let's Get It On Promotion, who they're involved in a huge fighter right now. Do you have the guy's name? I know it's the Chinese kid that he's undefeated, and he's knocking out everybody, and he had just broken off with Rock World. Is it what's that? I don't know. I was just talking to Terry and Tommy about it. I don't have all the, specifics, so I don't want to mislead anybody. But good for Terry and Tommy Lane, Mills Lane's kids. You can follow them. Let's get it on boxing and local kids put on great cards.
Yeah. So another another big obstacle to that too is just the boxing promoters have this long-standing deal. I mean, whether it's Bob Arum or Eddie Hearn, who's the big guy in the UK with guys like Anthony Joshua. A big part of the issue is, you know, conflicts between the promoters, meaning they dealt with each other before to get a certain fight put together or one that fell apart, but they didn't like they didn't like the interaction with the other guy or the deal they ended up getting or the fight that fell through. And because of that, you know, you end up seeing these sort of rivalries or animosities where the promoters don't want to work with each other just because they're sort of, you know, bitter how the last one went. And because that's a big reason why we don't see some of the mega fights, because of some of the promoters just passive aggressive, you know, behavior against each other. And they see it's, you know, they don't want to give in, and somehow that's got to change.
Absolutely. All right, full slate of football. Got a game tonight. I'll throw that out there real quick. Middle Tennessee versus UT San Antonio. Right now, it looks like UT San Antonio is laying 6.5. Probably no opinion for me, Josh. Yeah, I mean, did you do any research for this? Look at this.
A little bit. No opinion for me either. Except for some reason, Middle Tennessee State's the underdog everyone's in love with, and they are awful this year. Just remember the first game against Army. Right, they were getting 3.5. Everyone in the world was on Middle Tennessee, and they just got drilled. And then same thing against Troy State, where I believe, same exact deal. I think Middle Tennessee was about a 3-point dog, and they were a very popular underdog and got blown out. So now you take that to, you know, they're basically, you know, touchdown underdog in this one. Yeah, just stay on the sidelines for this one.
Stay on the sidelines. Totally. We have a whole slate of college football tomorrow.
Yeah,
like we
no
said.
Need to bother with this one.
But, you know, there are some things. We have the basketball game tonight, which we'll get to. But let's jump into this NFL football slate real quick. All right. Last night, I was a little surprised at the Dolphins. You know, they've scored 30-plus. They've had two tough games, and they're scoring. This Miami team could score a little bit. You know, you kind of got to like what you're seeing. They're 1-2 right now, and in three games, they've scored 70 points. I mean, so they're averaging 20-plus points a game. That's respectable. Jacksonville, that team is just, you know, every time they get on the Minshew bandwagon, something happens and you get to realize that he's not that good.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I just think with him, it's just more about, you know, the hype and the personality and the mustache or whatever. You know, I mean, I'm never into the, you know, the big, you know, style guys. I'm more for the substance type based athletes. I'm not a Minshew guy, but still, as it is, for a 6th-round draft pick, he was probably they're paying him obviously nothing, a 6th-round contract. He might be a nice stopgap until they either, you know, have the opportunity to draft Trevor Lawrence or whoever.
Take for
else.
Trevor? Yeah. Lose for Lawrence.
Yeah. Well, one thing I'm curious, was a sign of tanking too. For instance, when they let go of Leonard Fournette, where you think, well, 4th overall pick. Well, if you look at his stats, Fournette wasn't exactly a bust. He ran for over 1,000 yards last year, and they had the AFC title game a few years ago. He was basically the focal point of the offense. So just basically dump him and start an undrafted rookie at running back. It looks like you're the telltale signs of a rebuild.
Absolutely. Let's look at the first game here, Josh. Don Best had New England Patriots at home versus the Las Vegas Raiders. I'm going to call them the Nevada Raiders. Don Best opened this game up at -3.5 New England Patriots with a total of 48. Nick actually, he actually got ahead of that. He actually used 5.5 on the card with a total of 47.5. You got to like what both teams actually did last week. You know, the Raiders fall behind 10-0 versus the Saints. They don't give up. They come back and get a tough road win against a pretty decent team right there, which is absolutely fantastic. And you got the Patriots, who everybody thought, you know, bringing Cam Newton in, being a rebuilding year, they were going to tank for Trevor, or, you know, and he was just going to be, like you said, the stopgap, you know, and Belichick was against Trevor Lawrence. But Cam Newton's playing well. I mean, literally, they were 1 yard away from being 2-0, 1 yard away. And Seattle made a great play on the 4th down where they kind of submarine. They took away the running lanes, you know, or clogged him up a little bit. You know, so you're not going to take him on high at the 1 yard line. He's going to carry you to the end zone. So it's pretty good coaching, pretty good execution by Seattle. And you got the Raiders playing on Monday or playing a late game, then traveling and playing early game on the East Coast next week. Doesn't really fare well for the Raiders in this spot. You know, I'd be looking maybe to lay 3.5, but, you know, this is getting up to the into the 5 range where I'm not quite sure that I can play either team in this spot. So for that being said, I'm probably going to pass on this game, Josh. Pass. Yeah. Maybe play the under a little bit. Maybe play a little bit of the under.
Yeah, you know, and there was actually some sixes out there, you know, early in this week on the Patriots. And you're right, it's sort of the prevailing sentiment. This is sort of a letdown spot for the Raiders. And you know, the Patriots have looked pretty good. The whole thing about Cam Newton, I figured he was a bargain when they got him, but it was just all about the health. You know, how was he doing? Would he hold up? Obviously, physically, he looks great. And people also tend to forget, like, even though his last couple of years in Carolina might have been on the forgettable side, the guy was a league MVP and a Super Bowl participant, again, not too long ago. It's not as if, you know, his actual talent, what he can do on the field, should surprise anybody. But so long as he stays healthy, obviously a real fortunate pickup for them. But can I agree, the number's getting a little bit too big. I don't necessarily trust the Raiders in this spot. With as good as they've looked so far and as poised as they were, like in week one against Carolina, you gave up the lead but came back and won on a late drive and coming back from 10 points down twice at home to the Saints on Monday. This team, it looks like they've sort of turned the page in terms of poise and resilience and all that. Yeah, to me, it's take the points or pass.
All right. Let's head off for our next commercial break. We'll come back. We'll continue with the NFL slate and get into this college slate also on ESPN 94.5 FM.
Now, back to the William Hill Sports Show, live from the William Hill Sportsbook inside the Club Cal Neva.
All right, I'm back. I guess we got the disclaimer in. Running down this NFL card, Bills at home Sunday versus the Rams. This is a good game right here. You know, the Bills minus two, they opened up at minus three, so we got a full point move on the dog in this spot. Kind of the same thing we had last week with the Rams and the Eagles, and then the Rams just go in there and absolutely dismantle the Eagles. I really don't know what to think about this Rams team. You know, I think that they have their spots and their moments, Josh, but this is just a tough spot. I mean, Rams are 2-0, Bills are 2-0. Who's the better 2-0 team right now, Josh? I mean, you have, you know, Goff versus Allen, and this Bills team is a really, really young team. Rams has given up 36 points in two games. The Bills have given up 45 points in two games. I guess if it's getting under, if it's under three, I'd probably maybe be looking to take the home team here. If it gets to three and above, I'd be looking to be take the dog here. I don't really see any value in either one of these teams right now, Josh.
Exactly. Nor do I, except, like you mentioned, I'd be more inclined, though, to take Buffalo. I just think so far they've looked a little bit like the stronger all-around team. You know, the Rams had a bit of a down year last year. You know, they had injuries and some misfortune. And so to see them, you know, game one, I wasn't surprised. You know, they beat Dallas at home. I was a little surprised how lopsided last week's game was. But at the same time, looks as if the Eagles sort of pick up where they left off last year. I mean, they've got some pretty serious issues, and the quarterback's not playing well. So in this spot here, again, with Allen's progression and what they've got on the defensive side, it's like, yeah, I might take a small shot on the chalk, but not a huge play.
All right. Steelers at home laying three. Nick used 3.5. It's up to four, so a little bit of money coming in on Pittsburgh. Totals at 45.5 on the card, down to 45. So a little bit of money coming in on the under in that, too. It looks like when this game opened up, it was 5.5, 45. This Texans team, I really don't know what to expect. I guess they came out and played decent week one. Then week two, nothing, you know, lose again. And now they're going on the road against a Steelers team. You know, I watched Ben the first quarter and a half in week one. I thought, oh man, he's rusty. He seems like he's gotten it together right now. Juju Schuster is banged up. Looks like James Conner is going to be a go. I have no, but once again, this number's just too big, Josh. I mean, why isn't this a game that Houston can actually compete in? I mean, it goes, if you give me 4.5 or more, I'm going to play Houston in this spot.
Yeah, I think so as well, Ken. I feel like, you know, with Roethlisberger coming back in that first game against the Giants, it's like, yeah, the Steelers look pretty decent against a bad team, but and they're all similar to the Patriots historically in that, you know, they're such a public-heavy team that the rating's going to go up on them pretty quick and maybe be a little bit inflated. That's how I felt even last weekend. Don't get me wrong, this was far from a lock or whatever, but I actually took Denver with the points because I felt the same way. Like, you know, Denver had some bad breaks or whatnot, even the opener against the Titans, but they moved the ball reasonably well. Drew Locke, even though he's hurt now, he was looking pretty decent. Like, I think Denver could probably stick with him. That just seems like too many points. Now, granted, they went, you know, they were on the doorstep. Denver came back and almost won the game. They ended up covering. And I feel like right now, you know, you want to call it the public tax or whatnot, is a little bit high in Pittsburgh as well. I mean, the Texans haven't looked great so far, but for sure, this is the type of spot where there's some value.
All right. San Francisco traveling to play the Giants on the road. Nick used 4.5 on the parlay card. A full point move to the Giants, and this is down to 3.5. I'm taking the Giants here. I mean, you talk about injuries. You know, it's easy to overcome an injury, but look what San Francisco's lost on both sides of the ball. I mean,
yeah, the first half last week, biggest name, crazy.
The quarterback, their best wide receiver, their best defensive player. And you have a Giants team here. You know, they've looked good in spots. I know Barkley's out, and I know that probably Devontae Freeman, he might get a couple of snaps this week. I don't know if he's active or not, but, you know, they go out and they sign him. But, you know, you got San Francisco, you know, traveling, you know, playing on the East Coast, traveling back home, going back to the East Coast, and it's just a bad spot for San Francisco. They're 1-1 in the NFC West right now, and I just don't see – I don't see them going in and winning this game. I mean, I like the Giants. It's going to be one of my better plays, to be honest with you, especially if I can get – and I'm definitely going to have it on Nick's parlay card at +4.5. I think that, you know, I'm covering three and four, and I think it's a good spot for the Giants right now to actually get in there and be able to play or keep up with a team that's basically lame. I mean, Mozart's out, Kittle's out, Garoppolo's out, Bosa's out. There's another defensive lineman out. I mean, it's just – tough, tough spot, Josh.
No, I totally agree, Ken. I'd like to be getting more points, but you're right, though. I mean, the Niners are such a wreck with those injury concerns. And the Giants, see, to me, I feel like they're the opposite of the Steelers in that the perception is that they're just god-awful, and they really aren't. Like you said, that opening game, they were right there. It was that late interception. You know, they were right there with Pittsburgh until that interception happens. They got away from them a little bit. But same thing last week. They fell down early to the Bears and came back, even without Barkley. They were right there, came up short at the end. But that's a couple pretty competitive games. And, you know, even without Saquon Barkley, it's one of those deals where, you know, you never want to say a team's better off with probably their best player. But at the same time, you wonder, he has so many carries that result in losses. You know, he's one of those make-or-break type of backs, right? It's not like Mark Ingram or somebody who's just going to plow ahead for 4 yards every time and keep it moving. Barkley's either going to lose 6 yards or go for 80 and a touchdown. And so many teams already had stacked the line of scrimmage and just kept him in check that you wonder, you're in such a long down and distance, maybe you're better off with a more versatile back, and then suddenly you see the offense flourish a little more. The only issue, you also, I'm sure, are aware because you play fantasy a lot too, but Sterling Shepard's a pretty big loss for the Giants because sure. So far Daniel Jones, it looks like that's the guy he has the most rhythm with. So I'd be concerned about that. But Evan Ingram.
Slayton.
Right.
Is it Slayton?
Right. No, you got it.
Yeah, Slayton. And, he's playing well right now. And Evan Ingram, you're right.
Right. So anyhow, more or less, you're right, though. In the NFL, like, yeah, one or two guys, yeah, you move on. But now, like, your four most important guys are Mostert. I mean, they're all gone. Well, the Giants are the play.
At 4.5, absolutely. I mean, I don't see San Francisco separating here with a depleted roster. I just don't see it. So give me the Giants here. It'll be one of my better plays, especially at 4.5. Titans traveling to Minnesota. This opened up at 2.5 with the Titans being the favorite. A little money coming in on Tennessee with it going to 3 right now. You know, listen, this Minnesota team has had some – they look terrible right now. But they're not as bad as they look. And Minnesota at home, I don't want any point with Tennessee going on the road right here. I saw what the Titans did in Denver. I think Minnesota's better than Denver. I think this is a spot for an 0-2 Minnesota team to get back into things. And this is basically their season. Green Bay's 2-0. Chicago's 2-0. They're a cellar dweller behind Detroit, with Detroit and them both being 0-2. This is a great spot for Minnesota to get a win. If this gets to over 3.5, I'll be all over the dog in this spot. I think they have just enough in them to keep this close and possibly win the game late.
No, I agree. And like you mentioned, it's one of those things where, granted, you know, the Vikings haven't looked great the first couple of games, but look at what the, you know, Packers ended up doing. I mean, their first two games, over 40 points in both of them. And it's bizarre because, you know, Minnesota historically plays Green Bay well when Minnesota's at home, but, you know, it takes some time to get going. And I just look at it this way, Ken. If we just rolled back the clock a few weeks, if this was a week one game, it'd be Minnesota lane points, right?
3.5.
Probably 3.5, 4.
Sure,
right.
Of course
so that implied line value of almost a touchdown worth, where you're not even laying any points. And what the bottom line is, like you said, man for man, the Vikings are probably the better team. I'm for sure on the underdog here.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially a home dog, you know, 0-2 coming home. It's like, listen, guys, this is it. This is it. This is first round of the playoffs.
You know, exactly.
Because if you fall 3 games behind in this division, like, you know, either Green Bay or Chicago is going to win this week. I mean, one of them is going to win. So they're going to be 3 games. They have 3 wins. If Minnesota loses this game at home, down 3 with from the division leader. Because, I mean, this looks like a season where if San Francisco rights the ship, guys, the NFC West might get all the wild cards. I mean, who else is it going to be? Dallas is going to separate in the East. Then you have Green Bay. I think they're going to continue there. Then you have New Orleans and Tampa Bay, I guess, in the South. I don't see necessarily a wild card coming out of there. But then you got the Rams and Seattle and Arizona all 2-0, and San Francisco 1-1. I think they're going to right the ship. This is the season for Minnesota. If Minnesota loses this game, bet against them next week. If they win this game, bet on them next week. Because if they lose this game, their season's over. I think you get a huge effort out of Minnesota this week. Another team that I can't really figure out right now is the Cleveland Browns. And they're laying Roxy. Dom Best opened up at -4 and 45.5. And Nick used – it's up to 7.5.
It's up to 7, yeah.
Wow. Maybe a teaser spot for me for Cleveland in this spot to maybe get the money. But this is just – this Cleveland team, Odell Beckham coming out, that he's not going to be used the way people would think he is. And, you know, Chubb is there. I don't get it. You know, I really thought Baker Mayfield was going to have a huge, huge year. I was really wanting to take Baker Mayfield in fantasy late because I thought that, you know, he had some great spots. And the defenses they were going up to were supposed to be pretty, pretty Swiss cheese, so to speak. But other people fell. So I didn't end up with Baker Mayfield, which I'm ecstatic about because he's not doing anything right now either, Josh. I don't know what's going on in Cleveland right now, but they're not headed the right way.
Yeah, you're right. To me, it's one of those things where it's just pretty much a pass where if Cleveland blew him out, I wouldn't be surprised. But at this point in time, I'm not up for laying a touchdown with them against just about anybody. And with Washington, it's hard to know what to expect. To be honest, I haven't seen a whole lot of them. I saw a lot of the highlights actually first week when they came back from 17 down against the Eagles and won. And then last week, it just wasn't terribly surprising to see them, you know, get blown out in Arizona. Overall, you know, Washington's pretty marginal. So you might be tempted to think about taking a full touchdown, but I don't trust either club in this situation.
Well, it's one of those things. I know what you're saying. I mean, what was the final score last week? Cleveland, they buried. Who'd they bury?
It was on Thursday night against Cincinnati.
Yeah, Cincinnati.
Right. But they backdoored the spread.
Yeah, Cincinnati backdoored it. But, you know, but they give up a lot of points, too, to a rookie quarterback. I mean, it's not a good spot. I just don't like this game. Next game, Philadelphia and Cincinnati. Speaking of that, Philadelphia, Dom Best opened up at 5.5, a total of 45.5. Let's see what Nick used. Nick, another game that's up to 7.5. Or, excuse me, it's 4.5. It's down on Cincinnati. And the Eagles, another team. I mean, this team is terrible. They've scored 36 points this year and given up 64 points. As a matter of fact, every team in the NFC East has given up more points than they've scored, believe it or not. Every team in the NFC East. Who is Philadelphia to be laying points in this game? I mean, you got a Bengal team that seems to be hungry, fighting, wanting to play, young. I don't know. I know I'm supposed to be having opinions on this game, but I just don't see a lot of the angles. And I mean, this is a pass for me, Josh. This is a spot where I'm supposed to push all in with Philadelphia. It really is. They're 0-2. My same reasoning in the NFC North with Minnesota against the really bad Washington team. Washington's leading the division at 1-1. Them and Dallas are tied 1-1. And this is supposed to be let's get back in the race. So it's supposed to be Philadelphia. But do they have enough talent, Josh, do they have enough talent to separate
here? Well, I'll put it this way. I think they have the talent, but something's going wrong with that team, Ken, because it's not
only Zach Ertz is even unhappy.
Right. Last year, where they had all the expectations, it's kind of funny, right? Because the Eagles will send you to the, you know, poorhouse because there was that thought last year, oh, the Eagles, they're going to come around, and they just kept losing or barely winning against teams that you think they would beat handily. And then somehow, right toward the end of the season, it looked like all was lost. They won whatever it was, the last three or four to sneak into the playoffs. But the bottom line is this team isn't very good, but they even got better in terms of last year. They were cut a bunch of slack because they had a big case of the injury bug. This year, you have more weapons. I mean, Miles Sanders is back, and you have, they drafted pretty well for some depth along the offensive line, things of that nature. And yet something's going on there. It's just bizarre because you would think, right, they had all that momentum with Doug Peterson. They went to, won that Super Bowl and you thought it was crazy. But now from what I've heard, and I'm not the type to always blame the quarterback or whatever, but Wentz, for one, he hasn't looked the same ever since he came back from that injury. But secondly, you've probably read the reports too. There's the speculation that he's sort of the divisive force. They're saying a lot of his teammates, don't like him. And I read an article that said after he threw an interception in the last game, he went over to the bench and not a single guy came back and patted him and said, hey, we're good, whatever. No one talked to him. And so believe me, that's one of those things where if the locker room's not believing in your quarterback, you got an issue.
Absolutely, because he's the face of everything. And if they're not behind him, that means they're not running the route right. You know, they might miss a block, playing patty cake out there instead of football.
Exactly, so, the old Olay block, right?
Yeah, pass to me. I mean, if this gets up any higher, once again, guys, it looks like a Bengal teaser spot for me. Why not? Why can't the Bengals score against a team that's given up 64 points already in two games? They're averaging up 32 points a game. Why can't Cincinnati score enough points. Maybe Philadelphia gets the win, but this is a Cincinnati to be able to keep it close. So let's head off to our next commercial break on ESPN 94.5 FM.
Now back to the William Hill Sports Show, live from the William Hill Sportsbook inside the Club Cal Neva.
All right, welcome back to the William Hill Sports Show. Coming to you a little bit earlier today at the ESPN studios because Miami and Boston, you know, can tip off at what time are they tipping off?
5:30.
Pre-game will be at 5. Right now, Miami is a dog in this game. They lead the series. It actually a half point move on the side end total since we actually started. Boston is up, opened at 3 when we were here earlier, up to 3.5, 213 and 213 and a half, 214 now as far as the total is concerned. Josh Nagel from Sportsline here with us today. We'll be posting our picks later on our Facebook page at Kenny B ESPN Sports Handicapping. Kenny B ESPN Sports Handicapping. Make sure you download the William Hill mobile app. I got to get all this stuff in. Make sure you download the William Hill mobile app at www.wimhill.us, full-service mobile betting app right at your fingertips. And before we move to the next game, Josh told a good story that I didn't know about Philadelphia, as a matter of fact.
Okay, Ken, right. So we were mentioning how
Cincinnati.
Right, and there's speculation that Wentz might not be the most popular guy in the locker room. What to add to his problems? One of the funniest things I've seen in this era of sports where you've seen all the leagues like the NBA and everyone else is trying to sort of recreate, you know, the real live production aspect of a game with whether it's crowd noise or virtual fans or all the above. Well, apparently, when the Eagles went downhill last Sunday, the PA announcer, the production people at the Eagles Stadium, after a series of three and outs, I guess the last one being pretty ugly, they actually played crowd booing noise through the speakers. And
So the virtual fans in Philadelphia booed their own quarterback.
Carson Wentz got booed off the field by fake fans.
I want to know who controls that.
Yeah, was there
that
a big
is
decision?
Fantastic.
Are they sitting up there like the Eagles brass? Like, do we do it? Do we just go for the boo button or not? Just sure. They went for
blow
it.
17-point lead at halftime versus the football team.
Exactly.
Yeah, and they said, let's boo this guy.
Exactly. So now he's got to live with that.
I want to go back and look at the expressions on his other teammates' face. Like,
yeah. What I heard a recording world? Of it, Ken. And here's the funniest thing. I mean, I heard a clip where there's like regional announcers doing the game, and they're like, oh, now the Eagles go 3-9 again. All of a sudden, they hear it, and it's pretty funny at the moment. Like, is that booing? Oh, no. Wentz is getting booed off the field by the
– Wentz is getting booed off the field at his own stadium by virtual fans.
Right.
That's fantastic. That is fantastic.
It was hilarious.
That is fantastic. I guess they get paid enough. That's what you get, buddy.
Yeah, exactly. And, hey, for what it's worth, a couple years back, I mean, they – signed that guy to a huge deal. It's one of those things where I'm always on the side of like, hey, athletes are human too or whatever. But for the paycheck that guy cashes for each individual game, it's fair game.
All right. Next game, Atlanta at home versus the Chicago Bears. Here's another team, Atlanta 0-2. Chicago's 2-0, different divisions. But, you got to get a good effort out of Atlanta right here. The issue is that, this 0-2 Atlanta team, they score the third most points in the NFC at 64. But they've given up a ton of points at 78. I do believe that's the most points – that is the most points given up in the NFC at 78. But how good is this Chicago – this 2-0 Mitchell Trubisky Chicago Bear team? Really, how good are they, Josh? I don't know. It looks like a get-well spot for the Falcons. I'll be looking to maybe play some Falcons and over in this game. However, as far as just taking money – out of my pocket, can I really lay 3.5-4 with the Falcons?
Yeah,
I mean, Julio
good
Jones is questionable or not questionable. He didn't practice a couple of days, so keep your eye out for that.
Okay, Ken, it's a good question. It's worth noting too. The Bears so far, I mean, that first week comeback against the Lions was actually pretty impressive. For some reason, though, Trubisky, that's the one team he's always played well against. But last week, I saw some of their game against the Giants, and that got ugly. I believe the Bears might not have scored in the second half. And they
should have lost to Detroit.
Yes, it makes you wonder what their potential is. But at the same time, Ken, in spurts, it reminds me of when the Bears had a breakout season a couple years ago, Matt Nagy's first year there, and appeared – they kind of played or game planned to Trubisky's strengths where it's like, okay, solid defense keeps you in it. Let's just let him sort of do his thing where maybe he gets out in space for some run-pass options because he's a pretty good athlete and sort of the short passing game that keeps you in there. It felt like last year maybe they're sort of asking him to turn into Joe Montana. There was a lot more elaborate passing game that he struggled in. I feel like they've gone back to basics with him. And when they do that, they're all right. And like you said, at this point in time, I couldn't lay points with the Falcons. Look what happened last week. What a disaster. I mean, I'm sure you were happy. You're a Cowboys fan. I didn't have any action. Actually, I had the over, so I was pleased. That hit easily. But when I'm just watching this fourth quarter unfold, I'm like, are they really going to do all the way with this and let the Cowboys, you know, win the thing at the horn and failure to even cover an onside kick. The Falcons just, they've got some problems.
I agree. And look, this is supposed to be a get-well game. And it very well could be. I mean, the Falcons, Atlanta's another team that they have to rise up right here. I mean, the team's – offensively, they've competed. I mean, they've scored 64 points. But, you know, they're only a game back in the NFC South, too, with Tampa Bay 1-1 and New Orleans 1-1. They have to win this game. And they're at home. You're supposed to get a huge, huge effort out of Atlanta this week. You know, if it comes down and gets to a 3, I'd back the Falcons at -3. I really would. But anything over 3, it'll be a pass. Over 4.5. It's dog. I mean, you're talking about the Bears want to run the ball, and Atlanta's given, you know, they've given up 78 points on defense all year. You know, they'll be able to control the game. Maybe look a little bit at this under 47.5. That seems a really, really high total, because who's to say Chicago's going to keep up offensively?
Yeah.
Colts at home. This is the biggest point spread in the NFL this week. You know, I pulled up my Dom Best stuff, and I'm kind of actually wondering if this opening line is incorrect. Dom Best has this game actually opening at 6.5 and 45. Nick used 11.5 on the card. Colts, number one defense in the NFL. They're only giving up 208 yards a game, just for the record. And everybody for the Jets is out. I mean, it looks like a teaser spot for the home team, the Falcons, the Colts. They need to keep pace right here. They're 1-1. Tennessee's 2-0. I like a lot what I've seen. You know, Colts scored 48 points this year, giving up 38 points, and it looks like a great, great spot for the Colts in this game. 11.5 is a whole lot of points. This totals went up to 44. The Jets might not hit the board here. Jets. Yeah. The total points for the Jets, Josh, I would make it 8.5 and let you bet either side.
Yeah, exactly. I put some research into this one. You're right. It's crazy. I mean, they're dead last in the NFL in total offense in pretty much every single category, by a wide margin.
So you got the best defense in the NFL hosting the worst offense in the NFL. And Le'Veon Bell's out. Who's the other wide – the Crowder's – is it Crowder, the other wide receiver for the Jets? I think he's out. And they're banged up, missing a bunch of people too. I'm referring to the Jets.
Right. And that's a rough one because, like you said, Kenny, all those signs point toward the Colts, but I still maintain, as I did at the start of the season, that I still feel like the expectations on the Colts, though, are a little bit, you know, too much.
Inflated?
Right. And so, as such, I still won't even lay the 11.5 until further notice. So, it's just a pass.
It's a teaser play for me. I think if I can get the Colts at home, guys, definitely a 10-point teaser play, because the Colts, I don't think they can let this game get away from them. You know, I'll be looking to tie it into a couple other teams, but I just don't see the Jets competing in this game. And it's an NFL, and I know that these teams are proud, but dadgum, I mean, this looks like a spot where the Colts have to right the ship, and they're at home. So I'd tease this down under a touchdown and tease it down to under 3, you know, on a 6 and a 10. So, but you know, like I said, the highest point spread in the NFL this week, Jets getting 11.5 points, a total of 43. I don't understand the half point move where it's going the other way, you know, from 43.5 to 44. Because, you know, the Colts, if they get a lead, Josh, with that defense, they can just run the ball and milk the clock. I mean, you could have 24 points at halftime and the game go under. I mean, very, very easily. So this will probably be an underplay for me as far as money out of my pocket. Let's go off tonight's commercial break on ESPN 94.5 FM.
Now back to the William Hill Sports Show, live from the William Hill Sportsbook inside the Club Cal Neva.
All right. Welcome back to the William Hill Sports Show. Come to you live from the ESPN studios on 94.5 FM. Like the show at Kenny B ESPN Sports Handicapping. We'll be posting our picks. Going to be a little bit later. We probably won't get them in right after the show, but we'll be giving our best plays, which you can get on our Facebook page, like I said, at Kenny B ESPN Sports Handicapping. And Josh Nagel has a ton of articles at Sportsline. Josh, why don't you throw out that a little plug there?
Yeah, thanks, Kenny. I appreciate it. But you're right, Sportsline.com, and now official partners of William Hill U.S., we work with each other to put out all the content now, and we, of course, had all fantasy and betting-related content to begin with, but you know, the partnership allows us to give even more resources and offerings, so all kinds of stuff up there. And like you mentioned, Ken, whatever your sport, I know you've even texted me over, what's our NASCAR
pick? I was just getting ready. Yeah, I was going to plug that.
Yeah, we've got any sport you want. We've got people there with solid, you know, histories of success in the sport, so it's good information for just $10 a month.
I made a lot of money on NASCAR during the shutdown with your NASCAR guy and his matchups, and that was like one of the only things you could bet. But I couldn't find a tout for Russian ping pong because they were booking that. I'm not joking.
No,
they were.
It was tough. We got into that business very briefly because, like you said, we dug our teeth into whatever was available. And, yeah, unfortunately, finding ping pong and chess experts were hard to come by, but we gave it a shot. We're in that business.
All right. The L.A. Chargers hosting the Panthers, 6.5. That's what Nick used on the card. Chargers at home laying 6.5. Total's at 43.5 right now. NICU's 44.5 on the card. Let's see. Dom Best opened up at 5. You know, this Chargers, this is kind of an interesting. What are you going to get in week two from this new quarterback? Everybody has heard by now that the Tyrod Taylor thing, which is the most crazy thing I've ever heard in my life. Right. He goes in for a simple injection for a painkiller and they end up puncturing his lung. So the Oregon quarterback, Herbert?
Yeah, Justin Herbert.
Justin Herbert comes in and looks pretty decent. You know, absolutely looks pretty decent. And so, and now you have the Chargers at home. You know, are they, you know, Tyrod Taylor's out? I mean, is it the changing of the guard? Because eventually they're going to work this guy in. They keep saying that Tyrod Taylor's going to have the starting job when he comes back. But, you know, this kid, he competes this week, gets a win. I probably only have the Chargers right here, Josh.
Well, here's the thing, Ken. Like,
especially with Christian McCaffrey out.
With the whole passing of the torch type of deal. You know, Herbert was probably going to be in there anyway. I feel like he was probably due to take over, whatever, either mid or late season. And so this sort of speeds up the process, and he looked pretty good. I felt bad for him. How sweet would it have been to have beat Patrick Mahomes head to head in your NFL debut? Would have been quite an impression. It wasn't really his fault. They're, you know, punting, whatever, with, you know, in overtime. I just feel like you would never give the ball back to the Chiefs in that spot, and even if you don't make it, so what? You're going to lose anyway. You know, at least give yourself a chance. And that was unfortunate, but he played well. You know, I'm not surprised, but I thought Herbert, by and large, was underappreciated most of his college career. He had a great career. For some reason, he fell a little bit in the draft just because there are some questions about his maturity or whatnot, but athletically, you know, he's gifted. I think, you know, they probably made a good future pick when they finally, you know, cut ties with Phillip Rivers for him to be the guy that, you know, the franchise cornerstone for years to come. I think it's a good one. The Panthers are sneaky competitive. Ken, you mentioned the McCaffrey thing really hurts, but I've watched, you know, their full two games so far. They could have beaten the Raiders. I mean, that was a good back and forth. They lost it on the last possession. And they actually played the Bucks. Well, I thought that was respectable because they were getting blown out, but they kept fighting and got it within a score late. I just feel like Matt Rhule, he's a good coach. He's already, to me, they already look different, you know, offensively. They're more varied, and he's building. It's a good work in progress. I just wonder if the Chargers kind of due for that letdown spot after they found a way to not win the game last week, and you come in here with the Panthers. I wouldn't lay points in this spot.
It's just with a new quarterback, you just don't know the mindset of this team. I mean, do they believe in Tyrod Taylor or do they believe in Hubert? I mean, it's an interesting spot right now. And when you lose Christian McCaffrey and then you have to travel to the West Coast and play the Chargers, you know, I just think it's a bad spot for Carolina. I really do. And I think it's a good spot. You know, as long as it stays under a touchdown, I'd probably be willing to back the Chargers or back the Chargers a little bit. So Arizona at home playing the Detroit Lions. 6.5 is what Nick used on the parlay card. It's down to 6. We got a little bit of move on the dog in this spot. 54.5 was the total that Nick used. It's up to 55.5. So a full move on the total to the going over. Kyler Murray I'm an Oklahoma fan, and he's producing it beyond my expectations. I'm amazed at what he's doing. You know, he's got the Cardinals right there atop the NFC West at 2-0, tied with the Rams. He's playing well. I mean, what can I say about it? You know, and you have the Detroit Lions. They're 0-2. They can't stop anybody right now. They've given up 69 points in two games. Kenny Galladay, I guess he's supposed to come back this week. I'm not exactly sure, but, you know, on paper, and it looks like from all the pro money coming in, this game looks to be a track meet. You know, where you got the total at 54.5 and a full move north to 55.5, Josh.
Yeah, totally. And like you mentioned, Ken, yeah, Kyler Murray. Yeah, he's looking great. I wasn't sure if the, you know, Cardinals were doing the right thing by, you know, taking him number one overall after having taken a quarterback high the previous year. But, wow, I mean, as dual threats go, I mean, it's just crazy. You're seeing, you know, Lamar Jackson sort of leading the way as pioneering this new age of, you know, dual threat quarterbacks who can, they throw for 300 and run for 150 more. He's been impressive. I put it this way, Ken, like very rarely would I ever want to lay points with the Cardinals. I felt comfortable doing it last week because I just felt like, you know, they were better than Washington, who I expected to have a letdown. So sure enough, you know, laid those points and it worked out. This week, though, it's the other way around. So now I feel like I don't want to get too carried away with laying a touchdown on the Cardinals every week out. And I feel like, to me, I would go with the Lions.
All right. Tampa Bay travels to Denver to play the Broncos. Tampa Bay's lane, they're laying some points on the road. 6.5 is what Nick used. It opened at 3.5. Tampa Bay going on the road, so a 2-point move to Tampa Bay. You know, and it looks like the quarterback for Denver, Drew Locke, is out. Cortland Sutton is out. Is that right?
Sutton, right? Their top receiver.
Yeah, top receiver and their quarterback, but. It's tough to go to Mile High. You know, Brady looked pretty pedestrian week one, in my opinion. Looked pretty good in week two. The one thing that is legit is this Tampa Bay defense. And I think this could end up being a low-scoring game. The total's 43.5, man. If I somehow can have a bunch of bettors come and, you know, get this game over 44.5, I'd be looking to play this game under. I really think it's going to be a lower-scoring game. I think Tampa Bay's going to get ahead, be able to run the ball and play defense.
Yeah, and like you mentioned, Ken, I mean, it's tough. You know, Denver still looks like they're reasonably competitive, and I thought Jeff Driscoll played most of the game in place of Drew Locke was pretty impressive. They didn't do anything with Locke in there before he got hurt, and suddenly Driscoll led a couple touchdown drives. He threw a touchdown to Noah Fant, who's becoming a real valuable tight end there. You know, they've got some pieces to work with. Melvin Gordon's coming along, but I agree with what you said on Brady. Like, after the first week, not only did he look better last week and actually victimized by a few drops on open plays that they had, it appeared Tampa Bay, speaking of Leonard Fournette, who seemed like an afterthought, you know, he was a late release by the Jags, and Buccaneers said, oh, you know, why not? We could use the help. He was a huge part of the game plan against Carolina. I just thought it made all the difference. Like, they were running more on the early downs, keeping him in a shorter down and distance, which, and he also kind of, you know, he sealed it with a late touchdown run after the onside kick. If he stays healthy, I think he'll be a huge factor for them, take a lot of pressure off Brady.
Absolutely. You know, Jones doesn't seem like he's going to be Ronald Jones. So I like, you know, they went out and got Fournette for a reason. They did.
Yeah.
You know,
and like I said, I don't think the guy's toast or bust or anything like that. But.
All right. Seattle at home, it's a 1:25 game on Sunday versus the Dallas Cowboys. This opened up at Seattle at home as a 3-point favorite. It's all the way up to 5 now. So 2-point move towards Seattle. You know, I can tell you right now that. Dallas can score, and Seattle can't stop anybody. Seattle's given up a ton of points. They've given up 55 points in 2 games. Dallas can score. Now, I'm a Cowboys fan. This is getting to the point where I think Dallas is going to be able to keep up in this track meet, and it does look like it's to be a track meet. Like we talked about, the Arizona total going up a full point. This total's gone up 2.5 points.
What's our total?
Yeah, it's 57 right now. That is a lot of points.
That's
massive
points. For an outdoor game, totally.
I mean, I'd be looking to play this game under.
I would too, because like I said, that's borderline out of control. You just wouldn't see that unless it's, you know, in a dome, whatever, Saints against the Chiefs. I mean, just two offensive juggernauts. These teams are good, but you're right, that's a high total. But and to your other point, Ken, I agree. I think Dallas covers here. It's one of those deals. Look at what happened in Seattle last week. Same thing, you know, primetime game with a good opponent. Went down to the wire, and they had that goal line stand, and they prevailed. It's a bit of a letdown spot for them. And over the past few years, this has just been a real competitive rivalry, right? A playoff game a couple years ago, Seattle went to Dallas and lost after having won the home game. But all of them were decided by like 3 points or less. And I just feel like with those key numbers in your favor, I don't see Seattle creating the separation. They might, you know, whatever, if it's 28-24, I don't see them covering.
I agree. I think it could be a lot closer than people think, and that's all I'm saying. You know, I'm a Cowboys fan, but I tend to stay away from Cowboy games. I like the Dallas in this spot, especially if it gets up any higher, especially if it gets to 6. I mean, if it gets to 6, it's almost like I have to take Dallas I have to take the Dallas in this spot just for principle.
Totally.
So let's head off to our last commercial break. We come back, we got 2 more NFL games we'll cover. Saints and Packers, Ravens and Chiefs, great Monday night matchup. And then we got to get Josh's parting shots for the college football on ESPN, 94.5 FM.
Now back to the William Hill Sports Show, live from the William Hill Sportsbook inside the Club Cal Neva.
All right, we're back for the last segment of the William Hill Sports Show, week 2 of the NFL season, week 1 of the return for SEC football, Josh. I'm excited about that. 2 games, let's get through these real quick. The late game on Sunday, Saints and Packers, great matchup. Saints at home laying 3.5 is what Nick used on the card, down to 3 with a total of 52. I'm 100% not impressed what I see with the Saints after 2 games. Give me the Packers in this spot, Josh. I'm just going to I'm going to throw that out there. Give me the Packers.
No, I hear you.
Getting points.
Basically, if you just base it on what we've seen so far, that makes all the sense of the world. But just one thing that throws me off a little bit with the research I've done on this game specifically, it's just crazy. You know, the Saints have always been good in the primetime spots under Sean Payton for some reason, especially, you know, typically boisterous home crowd, New Orleans, and they just come to play.
But
I didn't realize, well, Ken, they have some drawbacks or whatnot, but you do realize, and of course this record could be broken and whatnot. But under Sean Payton, they're 11-0 on Sunday Night Football at home and have covered every single one of them. And you're right, someday that streak's bound to be broken. But yeah, just in general, the primetime spots are incredible. That's why actually that loss to the Raiders was very rare, because I believe in all the primetime, which includes Thursday night, Payton's record, I believe it's like 29-9, which is still really good. But the Sunday night thing at home, and Aaron Rodgers has never won in New Orleans. Of course, that's subject to change. So it just seems like, hey, if the Saints get their act together at all, history suggests this is a good spot for them. But like you said, based on what we've seen on the field, it'd be hard to not like Green Bay with the points.
Yeah, I mean, just no matter, I mean, even if you get down, if you're down 14 points late, I mean, Green Bay can come back and, you know, and make a game out of this. I the Raiders, you know, they couldn't separate with the Raiders. The Raiders, you know, they're up 10-0 on the Raiders, and they let the Raiders come back and, you know, come back and, you know, end up beating them, you know. Now you have a short week coming home. I guess you have a late game on Sunday, so you kind of make up a little bit of the time. But, you know, I just think that right now with Green Bay playing the way they are, they've scored more points in the NFC. Have they scored more points total? They've scored in two games. Green Bay scored 85 points. That's the most points in the NFC. And in the AFC, the highest scoring team in the AFC looks like it is the Ravens at 71. What's Kansas City have? 68. So it's the Ravens. So they scored the most points in the NFL. Now, you know, no reason to make me think that, you know, Green Bay's not going to be able to do some stuff right here. So give me the Packers, and it's kind of a square play, because I know all the squares are going to be on the Packers, but I think I'm going to have to take the Packers and the plus and the points right here. What a Monday night game, though. The NFL finally got this right. The Ravens and the Chiefs. Could be a prequel to the AFC Championship game, Josh. What did Nick use on the card right here? Nick right now has he used the Ravens at -3.5. Man, you got to take the Chiefs in principle here at 3.5.
Totally. And you're right, Kent, the AFC title game we didn't get to see because the Titans caught fire and beat, you know, Baltimore.
Baltimore, right.
That would have been, you know, a pretty epic battle. We're probably bound to see it, you know, sooner than later. But I agree, it's not unlike that kind of crazy Chiefs-Rams, you know, super game of a couple years back. It went back and forth. Same deal. Like I said, out of principle, 3 in the hook with the Super Bowl champion, you have to take the underdog.
Patrick Mahomes? Just take the dog. I would take the dog no matter who the dog was here.
Right, right.
Wouldn't you?
For sure.
I mean, give me the Chiefs. I mean, Chiefs on a roll right now. I mean, they're just never out of games. Absolutely never out of games. So that's our card for the NFL. We're going to be posting our picks a little bit later. It's going to take us a little bit more time to actually get everything together, because we had to come on a little bit early because of the Boston-Miami game. I took Miami +4. It just got to 4 for a brief moment. I had to weigh in on Miami at +4. Could be right, could be wrong. I don't know, but I had to weigh in on that. Josh, college football. What do you got? Anything right now? Did you write any
for
articles?
Sure. Yeah, there's, again, a bunch of them for sure. Sportsline.com. Like you said, the SEC makes its debut. Everyone's curious to see, right, how the big boys look so far. I mean, let's face it, I'm appreciative of any college football, but by and large, the games we've seen so far, I mean, for better or worse, because of, you know, injuries, opt-outs, whatever, it has looked like a bit of a watered-down product. I mean, if you saw Oklahoma State, Tulsa, you know, last week.
Well, Oklahoma State was down to their third-string quarterback.
Right, but, you know, they're just loaded on offense or whatever in Tulsa. I mean, they scored 16 points. Just by and large, you know, they thought Miami-Louisville might be a decent game, and it wasn't. It was just a blowout. So I think we'll see more competitive games. But, yeah, there's a couple I like. For instance, Ken right here. Because you talk about key numbers, Auburn was at 7, and I don't know why people are jumping in on Kentucky, but they are. But right now, Auburn's -6.5. I don't expect it to stay there for long. They got Bo Nix, you know, the quarterback, was a freshman last year, made a big impression. Most of their offensive line coming back. Kentucky, you know, they lost Lynn Bowden, who was their, you know, all-purpose guy. He was a receiver turned quarterback who the Raiders drafted, then you know, mysteriously, you know, traded right before the season started. I feel like Auburn rolls them here. I mean, Kentucky, does, you know, they've been coming up the last couple of years, but they're getting a lot of respect in that line. So I like Auburn a little bit, and we talked a little bit, and this is unfortunate because I like Florida. They were offensive juggernaut. Toward the end of last year, they were the most efficient offensive team you could find this side of, you know, LSU. But they opened 13.5 right now on the William Hill app. It's even 14. Obviously, you'd rather win on 14 than push, but I still like it because I think this is one of those deals where Lane Kiffin, a little shorthanded at Ole Miss, he's going to come in and probably, you know, and he's actually done a decent job in his previous stops, but right out of the gates, I don't see that. So kind of like a couple of the SEC,
What about the total right there? Talking about Florida being a high-octane offense last year at the end of the year, that the total's hovering right around 56.
Yeah, I also kind of think that one flies over because I think I believe Florida, I don't think Ole Miss will be able to stop Florida much. And then on their own end, Ole Miss is one of those deals where it's perfect for an over because they can't stop anybody. But they should be able to do enough to hold up their end of it as well. So it'd be whatever it is, a 45-28. I think it goes over.
Oklahoma is back this week. They're number three in the nation right now versus Kansas State's at Oklahoma. Oklahoma laying 28 with a total of 16.5. Oklahoma has had no trouble. They had no trouble in week one last week off. But Kansas State always plays Oklahoma tough.
Right. That's what I was going to tell you. Always. I was very tempted to take because you're right. They're just a thorn in their side, but especially all those years with Bill Snyder. Just one of the deals, right? Oklahoma loves to run and gun, and the Snyder system was just punish you, like milk the play clock and then run the option and just sort of shorten the game. And they've upset the Sooners a couple times and been close to all the others. The issue is, so far they've had a lot of injuries and everything else, but they struggled and, of course, actually lost outright to Arkansas State, who isn't very good. Let's face it, when you're K-State, a solid Big 12 team, you can't be losing that game. And who knows, maybe they've got healthier guys now, maybe they've been practicing enough to where they'll give a better performance. It's a little bit scary, but right. Ken, earlier in the week, you could have had 28 in the hook, which would have been sweet. I would still only take the points.
Alabama at Missouri, number two Alabama at Missouri, laying 27.5, a total of 55, Josh. I don't know a whole lot about Missouri.
Me
either. I kind of neglected to do a lot of college homework when I thought the season was done.
As did I. And here's the thinking. You can't even, I handed out those Phil Steele magazines, right, the College Football Bible. You can't even really trust that because that was put out months ago. So there's been so much roster turnover, with opt-outs and everything else. What you really have to do is do your homework. Like, if you're interested in a team, unless you've seen them somehow or follow them closely, you really have to zero in and see who do they have playing and who's healthy and who's not, because it's a real toss-up.
Georgia at Arkansas. Arkansas was horrendous last year. Georgia, number three team in the nation. It's unfortunate because the Pack was supposed to play Arkansas this year, Josh.
Right. It's too bad, too, because Arkansas is kind of starting over again, but they've got a few guys, actually. They got the guy sort of washed out at Florida, Felipe Franks. He was good. Started the better part of 3 years there, then just got injured. And Kyle Trask, the current starter, took over. So he's good, and they've actually got some playmakers. It's just tough to say how they're going to look. I mean, it's probably a pass for me.
Texas at Texas Tech. This game opened up. It's a full-point move already on the dog right now. It's where is it at right here? 18.5 down to 17.5, 17. So Texas is all the money's coming in on Texas Tech right here, and everybody expects Texas Tech to play high. Big total here at 70.5.
Yeah, and it's here. It's one of those things, too. It's just the history of the rivalry tells you. Texas Tech, for some reason, similar to K-State and Oklahoma, they always give the Longhorns a thorn in their side. I think a couple years back, right, they beat them on the last game of the season that prevented Texas from reaching the Big 12 title game. They always do that. Having said that, right, a couple of weeks ago they were struggling to beat a D3. They barely got by. I think it was Houston Baptist. It was like Division 3. You're like, what's going on with them? But I feel like they're reasonably well coached, right? Matt Wells, who was from our Mountain West, took the job from Utah State a couple of years ago. I just give some credit to the idea that teams could probably improve with a couple of weeks, of practice or whatnot. And, I like the Horns this year. They're actually loaded, but you can't lay those points.
LSU at home versus Mississippi State. LSU only laying 16.5, Josh.
Yeah, I would take Mississippi State, even though if you follow the show, I'm not a Mike Leach fan. But he's got some players there. The Stanford transfer, KJ Costello, who was pretty good the few years he was with the Cardinal. Just the type of guy Leach needs to do the air raid thing. And who knows how they're going to look. But LSU's just been hampered. They had so many guys. By and large, all their opt-outs are NFL prospects who just didn't want to jeopardize their draft stock. So they've been gutted by lack of depth in that regard, and who knows? Maybe they got Martin. Maybe they just roll anyway, but I would only take the points.
Vanderbilt travels to Texas A&M. Texas A&M, number 11 in the nation right now, laying right in the area of 30 points with a total of 47. Obviously, they don't expect Vanderbilt to score too much.
Yeah, exactly. But I would just lay off that one too, because same thing with A&M. They've had a lot of top guys opt out, mostly for NFL prep reasons.
Army at Cincinnati. Cincinnati, number 6 in the nation. Cincinnati laying 2 touchdowns.
Yeah, I like the Bearcats a little bit, actually, even though Army's been competitive early. This is a whole new level. Like I said, it's one thing to beat up on Middle Tennessee, which is always just a super finesse team with no physicality at all. So they're plowing through inferior opponents, and that's great. Cincinnati's got like a legit top 10 defense. They fly around the ball. I think the Bearcats actually pull away.
I like the Oklahoma game to go over a little bit. Just for
what's
the record.
That total?
It's 60. But Oklahoma's at home. Oklahoma had 50-something or high 40s last game, and they pulled everybody in the second half. I needed 6 points in the second half, and Oklahoma got 7 in the first game. Josh, is there anything that you wrote about or any other games on Sportsline that you wrote about that you really liked for college?
No, like I said, I mean, we've gone through quite a few, so I do like Auburn quite a bit, and I like Florida. Just one other thing to mention, Ken, with all the football, basketball, and all the glorious sports we have, solid UFC pay-per-view card tomorrow night, so middleweight championship, two undefeated fighters, which never happens, Israel Adesanya against Paulo Costa. Say if you've got the means and the time, check that out. Great fight card.
All right, full slate of college football tomorrow. I'd love to see it. We have games going all the way till 5. One minute. We have 4:30. Do we have any 9 p.m. games tomorrow? What's the latest game? Looks like just normal.
Full BYU slate. Against Troy State.
Yeah, BYU versus Troy State. So we're going to be posting all of our picks on our Facebook page at Kenny B ESPN Sports Handicapping. Give us a little bit of time because we'll be posting some college. So keep checking, and then we'll be posting some NFL too. Make sure you do all your wagering at William Hill, the best sportsbook planet on the planet. You can download the William Hill mobile app at www.williamhill.us. Full service sports betting app right at your fingertips. Brick and mortars are open. Come on down to the Club Count Even. Do your wagering right there. The bars are open. The event room's open. And you can watch the we're not going to get the UFC tomorrow, but we're hopefully there's going to be some changes coming to the amount of people that we can have in social gatherings, and we'll get back to having some of these events. So, all right, guys, with that being said, make sure, like I said, come down, do your betting with William Hill. Check out our Facebook at Kenny B ESPN Sports Handicapping. We'll try to give you guys some winners. Good luck, everybody, on your future wagers. See you next week on ESPN.